So Mayo, Apple Music has been doing this best 100 albums of all time countdown. And they're doing it, or they did it in a pretty clever way where they revealed like 10 albums at a time for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
As the list progressed, I would say the picks got more and more controversial. And Apple's implementation, similar to Apple Music Replay, hasn't been the best from like an app standpoint. You can't view the best 100 albums in the Apple Music app. You have to bounce out to a website. So my first question to you is, do you have any hot takes on the picks of the top 100 albums? Have you been following that discourse?
I have seen a lot of disagreement and chaos with some of the selections. I'm not going to pretend like I'm a super music connoisseur, right? I'm kind of easy. But I was kind of happy that the 100 they chose at least felt somewhat opinionated. Because
it was opinionated.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
I was worried it was going to be like, you know, just a conquest of capitalism with like, you know, 5 Taylor Swift albums and blah, 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 and every pop album you ever heard in your life. They were pretty restrained, to be fair. And it is like, you can tell there was, you know, 3 or 4 people, maybe just like Zane Lowe and his friends, right? Just picked 100 albums and then here it is. Now, you're always going to get disagreement when you're trying to pick the 100 best of anything. So the fact that there's people saying this is stupid or this is crazy is like, whatever. I was at least happy that it felt like there was a human, you know, a very human focus picking some of these things, and it wasn't just like a promo tour for the most popular artists on the platform or whatever.
Yeah.
So on that basis, I was perfectly okay with it. I'm sure you were distraught at the complete absence of Coldplay in the entire 100 albums.
It was a little bit surprising. I think they have at least 2 albums that would have been nice to see maybe one of those on the list, especially knowing that Zane Lowe is a big Coldplay fan. But alas, I will say it's both opinionated and really good for like Apple Music engagement, mm-hmm. Apple Music brand awareness, because it was like blowing up on Twitter and even Threads and everywhere with people talking about it and arguing about it. So if you follow the strategy of any PR is good PR, then it's been really good for Apple Music, even though a lot of people are mad about it.
Oh, I think he's been successful. Yeah.
It's cool to see them focus on like the album too, in an era where it's not really about albums anymore. It's like singles and TikTok songs and releasing 7 songs and then releasing an album of those 7 songs and a couple more. It's cool seeing them focus on like the quintessential classic album format.
Yeah, and maybe in like a year's time they do the 100 best songs or the 100 best something else.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They do different categories and stuff. Or they could do like 100 best rock albums or something, you know, like go a bit more drill down into it because it's obviously done well. And like they obviously put the effort in. Like you have to go to this stupid website to see it, but they have like, you know, special animations for all of the albums before they came out. They had like iconographic representations of them kind of teasing what was mm-hmm. coming up. If you click on one, it like shows you the set list and it has like paragraphs of description for every album, like when you actually click through.
Yeah.
So you can like read about it and why they chose it and like what this particular album meant to them. And then you can see the songs. If you want to play the songs, it gives you like a little preview. But if you want to listen to the full thing, you have to sign in. That's where the fact that it's like a standalone website thing kind of sucks, because ideally it would be, you know, in the Apple Music app, so you don't have to re-log in again just to be able to play the songs or like add them to your library or, you know, those kind of integrations. They've built out like a pretty complicated, technically involved website. So it just feels even more stupid that that can't be available in the application itself. Just like Apple Music Replay is, as we spoke about before, right? Like that is weird that that's still website only. And they like, you know, it's not like a static website. There's animation, there's transitions, it's like dynamic, the backgrounds change. There's all this stuff to the website. And it just feels a bit lost compared to being inside the app. Now, I tweeted about this or threaded about it when we caught these days. I guess now it's X'd because they've officially changed the URL from Twitter to X, but whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I said like, oh, it should be in the app. Like, this is the dumbest thing about it. And people are immediately like, oh, well, they want it to be on the website so that if you're not an Apple Music subscriber, you don't have the app downloaded, you can still read the content and see the list. I was like, yeah, that's fine, whatever. It doesn't have to be exclusively inside the app, right? You could have the website experience for sharing and then inside the app experience, because that's where it's nicest, because you get better performance if they did it natively and you don't have to log in again. Even, I think at a bare minimum, if the music app would just present a web view of the website, like inside, so you don't have to bounce a different application and it automatically just signs you in, so it just passes the login credential through. That'd be way better than what it does now, which is literally just like open Safari and then you're just at a website in a tab. So I kind of hope they fix that, both for, if they, I presume they're going to do another best albums thing again, and for obviously Replay that's ongoing. But the you can't deny the actual like craft in the website itself is definitely there. They spent a lot of time on it, and it's been a pretty popular initiative for them, like you said.
And you can see clearly how the infrastructure they built for this, kind of like you said, can be reused down the line for songs or genres or whatever they want to do. Like, this was the first one, but the infrastructure is now there to do a lot more of this type of stuff.
Yeah.
I did open the Apple Music app this morning, and it finally showed me like a pop-up window when I opened it saying 100 best albums with a big button that says go to the site.
Yeah, some things they are missing is like a big button that's like add all albums to my library. Like,
yeah,
take
yeah.
all the 100 albums into my library. The only thing they don't have playlists or anything like that. The only thing they got is a 100 best album DJ mix, which is like,
oh, really?
69 songs from those 100 albums that have been like curated and stuff. So there's some obvious places they can improve it, but for a first go of this kind of thing, it's obviously done pretty well for them.
I will say that I've been on the road a lot the past few days, and I've grown a newfound appreciation for Apple Music Replay and the playlists, because I've been an Apple Music subscriber since launch, since 2015, so I have Replay playlists dating back to then, and it's been fun listening to like the 2015-2016 Replay playlists on the road. Just like, they're such like a time capsule.
Mm-hmm.
For each year, that's been fun on the road. Instead of just listening to the same songs over and over again, having that throwback to thinking, oh, this is what I was listening to my, God, senior year of high school. It's both very embarrassing, some of the songs, and also just cool to like relive that era.
Yeah. And in terms of like the playlist generation stuff, I'm sure iOS 18 will have some like AI influence on playlist generation, or like some more, you know, AI centered recommendations, which has been a traditional weakness of the Apple Music platform, right? Like, it, I think everyone kind of says that Spotify is slightly better at personalization, so maybe Apple's gonna, you know, take the AI franchise to kind of catch up on that point. And we also had some news this week about another rumored iOS 18 feature for Apple Music, right?
Yeah, it was a report that said Apple is working on smart song transitions for Apple Music. So right now we have crossfade, right? And we talked about it last year. That feature didn't come to the iPhone until iOS 17, despite being available on Android and on the Mac for a long time before that. This report, even though it specifically says something called smart song transitions, the feature that it suggested would be new was the ability to customize the duration of crossfade. That's already possible. You just go into the settings app and you can choose between 1 second and 12 seconds for crossfade. So I don't know if the report got it mixed up and thought that was new, or if there is going to be something new for crossfade in general, where maybe it adjusts like the tempo of the song as the crossfade happens to bridge the transition, or tries to like modulate the keys of the song to make a more seamless transition. I don't know.
Maybe I was just reading something that wasn't there, but when I saw like smart song transitions thing, I was like, oh, so what they mean is like right now you can manually pick, you know, 1 to 12 seconds, but they're going to like change it depending what song it is. So if there's a long rollout to a song, it can like speed it up and crossfade to the next song. That's, and of course that'll be a quote unquote AI feature. But that's kind of useful. Yeah. So if that happens, that's nice. And they always keep, you know, that's the thing I like about Apple Music these days, is that it has momentum, in that every release you're like, they're going to have something new for it, and which you can't say for all of their services or apps. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So I paid a visit to Best Buy and checked out the M4 iPad Pro. And I put in our notes, did I buy one? And Mayo, you put, hopefully not. What do you think the answer is?
I think I was spoiled by Slack, because...
Oh, were you? Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. That was literally this morning we were talking about
it.
But
you literally dropped it in then this morning, and I almost put like the spoilers gif.
I did not buy it. I'm leaving the door open to buying it at some point in the future, maybe once the move settles down a little bit. But basically, your impressions last week were spot on. Like, my God, is it a beautiful piece of hardware?
Mm-hmm.
It's so thin and so light, the 13-inch especially. I have the 12.9-inch M2 version now, which is like the heaviest iPad Pro ever. Picking up the 13-inch M4 was like, I thought it was the iPad Air at first, and I was like, no, this is the iPad Pro, and the iPad Pro is lighter than the iPad Air now. The display, I only spent like 15, 20 minutes with it, right? The display compared to the mini LED, not that big of a difference for most things.
Yeah, obviously, that's what I said as well, right? Like, it's like the same performance, I mean, but you don't have the blooming on like white on black situations.
The Magic Keyboard is definitely the most impressive thing, the biggest difference compared to my iPad Pro. The trackpad alone with the haptic feedback instead of like the physically moving button is so nice. It's such a big difference. The function row, I'm glad that it's there. I kind of realized, though, the biggest button that I would be glad to have would be an escape key. But right now on my M2 iPad Pro with the Magic Keyboard, I just have the caps lock key mapped to the escape feature. Mm-hmm. So realistically, does that really matter? If anything, it would like something I'd have to relearn what to do because I'm so used to hitting the caps lock key now for escape. So it'd just be something new to learn. If I could use the Magic Keyboard, the new Magic Keyboard with my current iPad Pro, I would just do that, but I can't. I might buy one at some point, but right now it's not worth the $1,700 all-in investment, basically, for the base model 13-inch with a Magic Keyboard. It is not worth $1,700.
Yeah, it's lighter, it's nicer. It's not worth upgrading, I don't think. Like, you have to go back pretty far. Because even if you have the 2018 iPad Pro, which was, you know, the first Face ID one, that model is, like, relatively light, right? Like, they only got super heavy. They got heavier in the generations after that. So if you're upgrading from a 2018 model, you might not even feel the lightness different. Like the 2024 one is lighter still, but only just, right? If you're coming from a 2022 or 2021, then it's more significant in terms of the grams difference. But from 2018, it's actually not as significant. So that's something to bear in mind. Like if you're upgrading from like 2017, huge, huge win. 2018, possibly, if you're, you know, depending on what you want. I think anything newer than that, I wouldn't, you know, you can have the FOMO, but I wouldn't say it's worth the thousands of dollars you have to spend to take the FOMO away. Cool product though, great product.
Emily was with me and she picked it up and she was like, this is so light, this is so cool. Then she literally said, too bad I hate using an iPad. I was like, okay, that's a great encapsulation of a lot of the general sentiment towards the iPad.
Happy Hour this week is sponsored by Shopify. Check them out at shopify.com/happyhour. So if you're thinking of starting a business or you already have a small business of your own, are you using Shopify? And if not, why not? Shopify helps you sell everywhere and you don't need coding knowledge to get started. They have a bunch of free website templates that can get you up and running and they'll handle payments, secure transactions and shipping. The Shopify platform runs on servers in their cloud, so you don't have to think about managing services or hosting anything complicated like that, they deal with. You just focus on doing what you do best. And as you get bigger, Shopify is there with all the tools, knobs and dials to tune your e-commerce site to your precise needs. It's there for you when you're just starting out, selling your first products online, and it grows with you, even if you launch in retail and hit success with millions of incoming orders. Whether you're selling security systems, PC parts, or maybe you're a Mac developer wanting to sell direct to your users, Shopify is the answer. They have all-in-one commerce and in-person point-of-sale solutions that can work seamlessly together. I've sold stuff as an indie dev before online, and I've done it all by hand, but even though I had the know-how to like code it up, it was so much work and hassle that on reflection really wasn't worth it. Whereas what I love about Shopify is that it's so simple and it has everything you need in one place. So if you do hit the jackpot and you get bigger, you aren't stranded waiting for a dev team to build out all the functionality you now need. Shopify just has it there waiting for you. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States with global reach supporting millions of entrepreneurs across 175 countries. That's because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/happyhour, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/happyhour now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/happyhour. Thanks to Shopify for sponsoring the show.
So if you've been planning to buy a new iPhone and you've been holding off because you're looking to save between $10 and $30, Apple has you covered now. They've launched boosted iPhone trade-in prices. And contrary to some earlier reports about this, it's not exclusive to the iPhone 15. So if you're buying a new iPhone from Apple, you'll now get between $10 and $30 more for your trade-in, which is good, but not revolutionary. I mean, Apple adjusts their trade-in values, both raising and lowering them for all of their products, iPhone, iPad, and Mac, on a pretty regular basis. So this doesn't seem too groundbreaking.
Yeah, the trade-in prices have moved by about $50 in the last 6 months. So a $30 bonus isn't the most impactful thing in the world, but this is what they're pushing. You know, they've got it on the top of the Apple homepage with the, you know, the bar, the banner promotion. If you go into the Apple store, they've got you know, the little easels popped up saying trade in now for boosted value and stuff. So they're pushing for it. It runs at the moment through June 3rd. But when they've run these kind of promotions before in the past, they like extend the date sometimes, depending on how popular it is, I guess. But yeah, it's the headline's more impressive than the reality because, like you say, depending on what model you upgrade, the actual monetary boosted value is very small. So if you're trading in an iPhone 13 mini a week ago, that would have got you 270. Now you get 300, so that's $30 increase. But if you're trading in like an iPhone 14 Pro Max, that's an extra $20. And if you're doing an iPhone 14 Pro, not Max, that's an extra $20. But if you do the iPhone 14 Pro Max, it's only an extra $10. So, you know, not very much difference. I mean, I guess if you were deciding to buy now, it's nice that you've got an extra $30 in your pocket up to, but otherwise it's not really going to change the equation for you too much, I don't think. Like, if you weren't upgrading before, I don't really know that a $10 to $30 credit off the new purchase is going to change your mind, but, you know, this is marketing, I guess, and Apple's pushing for it. So
it reminds me kind of like car dealership marketing, where you like drive by and you see the big sign, get more for your trade-in today and upgrade your wheels. And then you go inside and it's like, maybe you get a little bit more on your trade-in, but you also have to buy this package and that package and the car is priced above MSRP. But hey, we got you in the door and we're going to put you in a new car today.
Yeah. And if you go back,
it kind of gives that vibe.
If you go back 5 years, Apple did none of this stuff, right? Like all of these kind of trade-in, trade-up, promo stuff kind of all began with the iPhone XR cycle when that was weak in 2018. Mm-hmm. And they had the big reset of, you know, making it easier to upgrade your device, adding payment plans, financing, and the trading thing being, you know, set up to counterbalance the weakness there. And they've done it, you know, every now and again since, depending on the success of that cycle. Perhaps they're running this promo as an indication that the iPhone 15 cycle is a bit sluggish. We've heard that, you know, from analysts and general revenue performance, right? Like some parts of the world, the iPhone 15 cycle hasn't been flying to the shelves perhaps as much as Apple expected. There was also a report this week that Apple's doing more aggressive discounting in China to help juice sales there. Doesn't help the narrative of, you know, iPhone weakness in the region at the moment. Although on the last quarterly earnings report, the China business was actually relatively good, or, you know, it wasn't like growing, but it was like not going anywhere near as badly as what some people thought it would be. So you have to take the, you know, take what you believe on that stuff. Like there was even a quote in the last earnings call where Tim Cook was asked about the reports about China weakness, and he was like, well, it's not what I'm seeing, you know, China would be up if not for blah 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 blah. So say what you want, but Apple wouldn't be doing, because in the Chinese discounts are like $100 differences, like it's not this like $20-$30 stuff, so they wouldn't be doing those massive discounts if they didn't think they had to. So there's at least some truth in that. But yeah, if you want to get an extra $30 for your iPhone 13 mini, well, now's an opportunity to do so.
And you probably love your iPhone 13 mini size, and sorry, you can't get that. You have to upgrade to something bigger. The narrative about the China stuff too, and why Apple iPhone sales might be struggling at least a little bit, is because they don't have the AI features that like Huawei have and some of the other Chinese smartphone makers.
Is it the AI stuff?
Exactly. Like we're going to see when Apple launches a bunch of AI features this fall. Do iPhone sales in China go back to like their peak of a couple of years ago, or are they still just going to kind of hold steady?
No, I think the clearly motivating change in China is the resurgence of Huawei, right? So
yeah.
And the local, like China has always been pretty domestic orientated, and obviously the Chinese government forces that on the culture, right? So any local manufacturers get a big boost. And it was only in the last few years that iPhone sales surged, and they surged at the same time that Huawei had all the tariffs and caps on it that prevented them from using, you know, various advanced technology. Like so they were basically just like worse phones for a few years. They finally redoubled their efforts and got their chip design and got a more, you know, competitive offering in terms of performance and camera and battery and overall. And now the Huawei phones are doing a bit better. The government's there pushing them. Last year, there was some, you know, stories spread around by the state about like iPhone security and like all the government buildings are having all you know, banning iPhones and stuff. So there's a sentiment against any non-foreign company. I mean, Apple does way better than almost any other non-Chinese company in the smartphone market in China. And for the last like, you know, since the iPhone like 13 to, you know, that like iPhone 12, 13, 14 cycle, various factors meant that they did really, really well in the region. And now they're kind of settling back down to the, you know, number two, number three spot. Maybe they'll go up again, but for the time being, they're kind of, you know, coming back to more of this, you know, long run equilibrium in that region.
iOS 17.5.1 is here, and
no betas, no 0.6s betas,
no 0.6s yet. Presumably, that would probably maybe coincide with the first iOS 18 beta, I think.
Yeah, usually they have one beta that runs across the summer and like August time that isn't the beta everybody cares about.
But iOS 17.5.1 fixes a bug in the Photos app where Apple said, or I'll just read from Apple's release notes, addresses a rare issue where photos that experience database corruption could reappear in the Photos library even if they were deleted. So this originated on Reddit, where a thread of people saying they had old photos from as far back ago as like 2010 reappear on their iPhones after updating to iOS 17.5. This, of course, rightfully so, raised a bunch of concerns about why deleted photos were coming back, why deleted photos were even still in existence, period. The thread on Reddit was, when it first popped up, I was like, okay, this sounds weird, but there's got to be more to the story here. Like, something, these people didn't delete their photos like they did, and they're just noticing because some bug is bringing old photos that are on the phone back to the front. Or something's wonky where they deleted it, but they didn't delete it from iCloud Photo Library or something.
Yeah, my completely unsubstantiated theory for a while was like, you know that thing in Messages where you can like share photos and it reappears in like your photo library, like integrated in? I was wondering maybe there was something there where like older photos were shared into the Messages thread and they were just like randomly appearing in the front in the Photos app, or, you know, something wonky like that.
It turns out that that's not the case, and that this was a legitimate bug. And there were a lot of reports, like the thread on Reddit grew and grew and grew over the week. And Apple's explanation is clearly that people deleted photos and they didn't go away. I mean, are you reading the release notes that way too? Like, this was a problem where deleted photos weren't actually deleted.
I mean, it doesn't say anything else, does it?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like Apple has these release notes. That's the only public communication they've had about it. And your mind can kind of just run wild. Like, huh, I deleted those photos and they can come back at any second? That is not good. When people delete a photo, they expect that the photo is gone. End of story. No database corruption or anything of the sort affects that. People think deleted photos are gone.
Yeah, well, in reality, obviously, anything can have a bug in it, right? Like, whether you're adding, deleting, editing, moving, like, it can all have bugs and glitches. It's quite rare for, you know, deletions not to be respected. Like, it's not exactly common, and regardless of whether it was a bug or not, it's significant and it should be treated seriously, because it's, you know, people's personal data, and you don't get much more personal than your photo library, you know, like, and especially the photos that people delete from their photo library generally are the ones that they don't want people to see anymore because of that. So you know, it's a sensitive topic, obviously. People take it, you know, anything like this gets a bit spread out of control by the conspiracy theorists about blah, 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 blah. There was some stuff that, like, someone on Reddit wrote that they got like an iPad from their friend and then they restored it and their friend's photos appeared on their device, and like that turned out to be, I think, just a load of rubbish, and, you know, someone just staring the pot of weather. But that spreads, right? And then that becomes part of the story too, in the absence of Apple actually saying what had gone on here. And it took them a few, you know, 17.5 came out a week ago. They didn't really say anything on the topic until the 0.1 was released, and they gave you that one sentence description in the release notes for it. And that's kind of it. Like, it's pretty reminiscent of the complaint I had about like the Apple ID reset situation, where Apple didn't say a word about it. And like, there are some bugs that elevate beyond the general hubbub of, you know, just little issues and little fixes, and they require, I think, a bit more sophisticated response, more than either nothing or more than a one sentence reply. Like, I was kind of hoping they would do one of those like Apple you know, support articles about this, where it's like, what to do if some of your deleted photos are reappearing, and it gives you a bit of, you know, a couple of paragraphs of explanation, like, your photos were as part of a database corruption on your device, the photos were deleted from iCloud, the photos would not appear on other people's devices, to delete them, you know, again, post 17.5 coming out, just send them to the trash again, they'll be permanently erased. Like, something like that to clarify the points. Because as it stands right now, I think you can guess what happened, right? Like, the local database was corrupted and was slightly broken, and so some pictures you said delete didn't actually disappear. But we don't know, like, were they deleted from iCloud when this bug happened or not, right? Like, did they still exist on the servers? That's the
question. Yeah, because some of the people were saying that photos that were coming back were from, like, 2010, 2011. Those people aren't using the same phones now that they were then. Presumably, they haven't just done, like, device-to-device restores every year since then.
Or maybe they have, and
maybe they have.
That's the people you heard the reports from. Like, you don't know how far back the database corruption goes, right? Because Apple didn't say. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of question marks still. And I don't think there was anything nefarious going on. Like, what interest does Apple have in these pictures? None at all. But you have to describe the bug in more detail than what you did. Otherwise, the only news people have to go on is all the conspiracy theories, and that's what caught on fire. And this is easily something which can spread and spread and spread, just like, you know, Batterygate or whatever you want, where 5 years down the road, people would be like, oh, Apple was keeping all your deleted pictures, do you know what I mean? And you'll Google it, and there'll be some headlines about it, and then it'll just, like, reinforce the incorrect situations. So I think Apple mishandled this. They should have had a much more solidified answer to the situation, and we basically had radio silence.
Because we never did get anything about that Apple ID login bug. And this is like the perfect storm of two things that you don't really want to mess with people about is their Apple ID security and photos, deleted photos reappearing.
Yeah, and Apple brands themselves as like the privacy first company, right? And like, yeah, it's a glitch, fine. Just say it's a glitch, your data is preserved, we care about you a lot, blah, 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 blah. Your photos didn't go here, here, or here. If this happened, then do this, and you can be, you know, confident that it won't happen going forward. Blah, 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 blah. Basically, none of that happened. So everyone just carries on believing what they believe, and whether they've got the right impression or not, that's what they now think, because Apple hasn't even given them an alternative narrative to believe in, because it's just kind of stupid. Like, at the very least, dispel the fake reports about, like, you know, restoring to a different person's device and that photos are popping up there, which doesn't make any, you know, for that to happen, something seriously bad would have to happen, because, like, the encryption keys would have to be completely broken open and, like, you know, device restores. Like, technically, that feels almost implausible, and there was only like one person who said that happened to them. So and that thread was eventually deleted on the subreddit or whatever. So we kind of just like think that was just made up. But obviously some people had deleted pictures that then restored to the same phone somehow, whether they were still sitting on a server somewhere or not. They were marked deleted from the user perspective and the physical file stuck around for quote unquote database corruption, which is a scary description in itself. Like, what, people don't even know what that means properly. So Apple has basically just screwed themselves here, I think, because they didn't handle it very well. And now the conspiracy theories took hold, and here you are.
And even though that Reddit thread about pictures reappearing on a sold device turned out to be deleted and by all indications is false, somebody who saw that thread or saw a headline about that thread last week, chances are those people aren't seeing the follow-up that the thread was deleted. So there's a whole narrative running among people everywhere, like people outside of the tech sphere, outside of the Apple world. Like, my sister's asked me about this problem.
Yeah, the photos resurfacing thing was on like BBC News. Like, it like broke out to like mainstream press.
And I think Apple needs to say something. Apple's feet need to be held to the fire. They can't just continue to stay silent on things like this and like the Apple ID login bug. Apple's PR strategy of kind of just letting things die out over time is growing a little bit tired, especially when it comes to stuff like this.
It's fine, so I think, for some things, right?
Yeah,
like some things, yeah, it's in their prerogative. If there's like a weird, you know, like the grainy screen OLED iPad thing was a thing for a day or so, you don't need Apple to comment on every single issue that's like kind of inconsequential. But when it comes to your data or like your account, like there's a slightly higher bar there. And, you know, plenty of cloud websites, if they have like an outage or they have a situation or like something like that, regardless of, you know, regardless of whether it's super serious or not, like, irrespective of severity, they'll do like a big blog post, post-mortem, describing what happened, describing how many customers are affected, describing what you can do if you were affected, you know, get more additional help. And it just gives you more confidence. Apple has done none of that. So it feels like customers deserve more. Yeah.
It's disappointing because they're so quick to play the privacy card in general. And something like this
and
happens.
iCloud Photos is a service you pay for, right?
Like,
it's not like it was a bug with the calculator app. it's like this is probably your most sensitive data on your device that people buy cloud storage to back up because they don't want to lose their pictures. And for whatever reason, there was a slight mishandling of how those photos were dealt with, right? And you don't cut it, you don't stem the fire immediately, or anything somewhat related to Apple doing something with photos immediately surges back into the fold of the narrative, whether it's like the CSAM stuff, or I even saw someone mention the iCloud hack from like 2013 where all those celebrities got those photos stolen. Like, you know, all of it comes back around, and like some of it might even be relevant. Like, that is the stupid part about this is like, what if a celebrity deleted a photo in 2013 and the database was corrupted and someone hacked their account today and they refound it? You know, like, it's like, I don't know. It's just a big mess, and Apple should do more than say nothing at all.
They did respond in when the big celebrity iCloud hack thing happened. They did respond about that at the time, didn't they? Like, they were upfront about that issue.
Yeah, because celebrities were affected. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's weird. Some stuff happens, and they like, I don't know what they just what the PR company internally decides is worth more attention or not. Some issues come out, and they release, like, you know, big descriptions, big support articles, big news commentaries. Other stuff, they say nothing at all. So I don't really understand how the balance is drawn. And the last couple of incidents, they have chosen wrong, in my opinion.
A lot of the times, the things they choose to respond to are debunking things that go viral, go in headlines, make mainstream news, make the BBC news. There's no debunking, at least most of this. Like, this was true. And that's probably why they haven't acknowledged it outside of the release notes.
Well, just be honest about it. People make mistakes. There's no problem with that. Just say what the truth is, dispel the fake rumors, then you can move on. Instead, it's kind of just left in this like quasi state of uncertainty, which is just stupid. And you can draw what you think has actually happened and, you know, try and be educated about it, but nothing beats like an official statement from the company itself. Because now when you Google about this problem, most of what pops up is all the weird conspiracy theory stuff about it rather than the truth. And why is that? Well, no one's been able to publish the truth because Apple hasn't confirmed anything one way or the other. So it's kind of stupid.
And when the next issue happens, we'll point back to this and the Apple ID login thing as more evidence that Apple is staying silent when they shouldn't be. This won't just go away.
They're missing the mark, yeah. Finally this week, Happy Hour is brought to you by Ladder. If you're anything like me, you have a certain tendency to put things off until the very last minute. Dentists, optician's appointments, filing taxes, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's usually fine, but you shouldn't mess around and wait when it comes to life insurance. Get term coverage life insurance through Ladder today. Go to ladderlife.com/happyhour to see if you're instantly approved. You know, I started needing glasses recently, and that was a moment that hit me like, I'm actually getting older, and stuff like life insurance somehow feels immediately more relevant. Life insurance gives you peace of mind to know that your family will be taken care of if the worst happens. And Ladder is a great place to do it, because Ladder is a 100% digital service when you apply for $3 million in coverage or less. That means no doctors, no needles, and no paperwork. It's all done online. You just need a phone or laptop to apply. You fill out Ladder's application form, and their smart algorithms will work in real time and tell you instantly if you're approved. Ladder has no hidden fees, and you can cancel any time. You can get a full refund if you cancel in the first 30 days. And Ladder's policies are crucially issued by insurers with long, proven histories of paying claims. And Ladder's customers rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot. So if you've been thinking about getting life insurance, Ladder is the place to do it. If you aren't sure, but you just want some more information, go on Ladder's website, fill out their online calculator, and you can see the costs and terms of the plan with no commitment. And as the cost of life insurance goes up as you age, now is the time to act and get it done. So go to ladderlife.com/happyhour today to see if you're instantly approved. That's ladderlife.com/happyhour. One more time, ladderlife.com/happyhour. Thanks to Ladder for sponsoring the show.
The information reports that Apple is developing a significantly thinner version of the iPhone that could be released as early as 2025. So the report explains that this would coincide with the iPhone 17, and it will feature a major redesign that it says is the biggest redesign basically since the iPhone 10. It'll be thinner and will apparently be made out of aluminum, unlike the current iPhones, which are titanium, a smaller hole and pill-shaped cutout for the front-facing camera and Face ID sensors, and the screen will apparently be somewhere between the 6.1-inch display of the standard iPhone and the 6.7-inch display of the Pro Max. The analyst Ross Young has said we can expect something around 6.5 inches, and the rear-facing cameras would be relocated from the upper left corner to the center of the iPhone's back. So thinner, aluminum, smaller screen, repositioned camera, hole punch cutout for the front-facing camera, and Face ID. sounds like a pretty big redesign. I think what's more interesting, though, is how this fits into the iPhone lineup overall. Because the analyst Jeff Pooh has said that the iPhone, there won't be an iPhone 17 Plus. The information says that this iPhone 17 Slim, whatever you want to call it, could be more expensive than the iPhone 17 Pro Max. So theoretically, for the iPhone 17 lineup, we'd have the iPhone 17, the iPhone 17 Pro, iPhone 17 Pro Max, then this mythical iPhone 17 Slim, iPhone 17 Ultra.
This is the Ultra rumor, right? That's been circling for a couple of years.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
Yeah, they know the iPhone has a lot of power. Tim Cook said it so many times that they've seen that when the prices go up, customers still buy it, and the customers are happy to buy for more. And so they're going to push it even higher and make even more, you know, average revenue per customer by putting in an even more expensive model. Nothing wrong with that in theory, but obviously at some point you hit the price wall of like the iPad Pro has, right? Where it's like, well, your current phone does everything the same phone does. This is just slightly better. But people have more affinity to the phone than a tablet. Like, there's so much brand value. People use their phones constantly. And so you can justify higher prices, especially as on the phone side, there's more. The market dynamics are slightly different in terms of like financing and monthly billing and subsidies
right, that's
and stuff.
The thing.
Yeah, like it's a bit of a different situation.
I mean, Tim Cook has literally said that he doesn't think we've reached the ceiling of what people are willing to pay for an iPhone. That was in an earnings call a couple quarters ago.
And with the 15s, they made the Pro Max is more expensive by cutting out the lowest end storage option, right? So you have to pay slightly more to get the to get into the Pro line, right? Because they dropped the 128, so you have to pay the 256 gigabyte price to even get started. That was related to that sentiment. And if you have another model, it's even a bigger draw for more expensive. I don't know how much more expensive they could go, but you can look at like the Samsung market and the Samsung lineup. They have, you know, Galaxy Folds at like $1,800, right? And I know they're foldable, so it's, you know, slightly different in terms of product mix, but still, clearly some people buy really expensive phones. And I don't doubt that an iPhone that was $1,400 would also, you know, fly off the shelves because the iPhone's really in demand in general. Like, maybe you don't end up selling more units, but you just sell the same units at higher prices.
Average selling price. That's the metric Apple loves so much to brag to investors.
Well, because they've already sold to the unit sales that they're probably going to sell, right? Unless they explode in terms of popularity more than they already have. In terms of the design itself, it's kind of curious, right? Because like the information presents it as like the thinnest, you know, the thinner iPhone. With the iPad, right? Obviously, they went for the thinnest Apple device ever tagline for the new iPad Pro. But that doesn't include the camera bump, right? On a tablet,
right,
you can kind of get away with it because, you know, 95% of the tablet is 5.1 millimeters and you've got this tiny little camera bump that's like 7 millimeters. The camera bump is a smaller, a fraction of the overall surface area of the device, and the cameras on the iPad are less good than the cameras on the phone, so the camera bump's smaller anyway, right? Like, it doesn't protrude as much. With the iPhone, you know, if you've got a 6-inch screen, the camera bump's pretty big. you can't like turn it on its side and be like, look how thin this phone is, but just ignore this massive hump in the middle of it. It's like, so I feel like the draw's like less significant there. You're more likely just kind of present it as like the redesigned phone, right? Rather than like, this is a super thin phone. That's why the Slim name doesn't really work for me. They can just be like, look, this phone looks different. And it's kind of annoying that this kind of implies that the pill hole, that, you know, the single hole for the front is going to be like ultra exclusive, maybe, because if that's going to distinguish it from the main line, because this is still going to be a 6.5-inch phone. I buy the 6.1-inch phone right now, right? Like, the Plus is pretty big. I don't know. 6.5 inches smaller than 6.7, but might still be out of my, like, ergonomics range. I don't know. We'll have to see when that happens next year. But it'd be really annoying if like the new cutout is ultra exclusive for the first generations. But
I mean, it's equally annoying as somebody who uses the current Pro Max, which is 6.7 inches, going to go to 6.9 inches this year. Then you have a world next year where the best iPhone, quote unquote, best iPhone is 6.5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird juxtaposition of sizing, because historically, with the exception of the Plus model phones, you've always associated premium, the best iPhone you can buy, with having the biggest screen.
Well, I'll dispute you slightly on that.
But
iPhone 10.
That's where exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
The Plus existed. The eight Plus was, you know, 5.5 inches, and the iPhone 10 was smaller screen than that. It was the iPhone 10 was more like the 4.7-inch iPhone form factor, just without the top and bottom chin bezels, right?
Yeah.
Because they got rid of the forehead and chin, but the overall screen size of the Plus was still bigger. And obviously they followed up with the XS Max in the year after, mm-hmm. but at least for the first generation, the iPhone 10 wasn't the biggest screen iPhone, and it was, you know, undisputably the best one. So maybe that happens here. Maybe they have the Ultra, and then eventually they have the Ultra Plus size as well. But that's even further into the future. The fact that they're moving the camera bump from the top left to the middle is also kind of interesting, because like, I feel like it's more in the way of your finger.
That's like what Google does with some of their Pixel phones, I think, where it's centered on
Google
the back.
Google has like a bar that runs all the way across.
Yeah.
Yeah. The information described as this is just taking like the rectangle and putting it in like the center rather than in the corner. But like, at least on my phone size, I kind of feel the cameras already depending where the phone goes. And if it's in the center, it's going to be even more in the way. It feels a bit odd. And it's also weird because in terms of thickness, if they're putting it to the middle, that's also going to be where the Face ID and camera is on the front. So like, just in terms of mm-hmm. making it a thin device, you wouldn't want those components to be overlapped with each other, I wouldn't think. So, interesting choices there. Aluminium's also weird, because like, you're going to push it as like the Ultra phone, but you're going to use like a quote-unquote less premium material for it. Some interesting choices.
Because when the iPhones were stainless steel, a lot of people, including myself, said that the aluminum of the non-Pro phones was nicer because it was lighter and less fingerprinty and all of that. But now that the Pro and the Pro Max are titanium, again, that's a weird change. Go from titanium on these phones back to aluminum, which, again, is probably an inferior material in most regards. Maybe they can't make a phone that's super thin out of titanium.
They'd probably get a bit lighter from it, yeah.
I'm curious, too, just to know how Apple plans to market an iPhone lineup where there's basically one non-Pro phone, one quote-unquote affordable phone. Are they just going to lean heavily into the fact that, well, the iPhone 17 is the newest, but if you want something cheaper, we still sell the iPhone 14, 15, and 16.
Right, because they're going to take the Plus out, right? So yeah, right, it's the one cheap one. Yeah.
Again, that's. I think the design part of this rumor is interesting. I think what's more interesting is what the iPhone lineup looks like going forward, because maybe Apple's just found that having two affordable iPhone models just doesn't work. I mean, the iPhone 12 and iPhone 13 mini, by all indications, didn't sell super well. The Plus model phones, by all indications, aren't selling super well. So maybe we get into a world where you have the iPhone SE as the sole cheap option with a modern chip, and then you have the iPhone 17, and then the two or three most expensive models. So maybe the iPhone SE plays a bigger role than it does now going forward.
Yeah, I mean, the market dynamics have definitely shifted, because like, you go back a few years, still when they had the Plus sizes and the normal sizes, the normal phone, like the regular size, was the most popular, partly because of screen size, partly because of price. These days, the Max, I believe, is the most popular model they sell of the iPhone 15 lineup. It's the biggest screen. It's the most expensive. I think it accounts for something like 40% of sales of the overall lineup or something. Obviously, Apple doesn't say the mix specifically, but that's based on analyst estimates. So they've obviously seen that customers are willing to bear the higher priced models for the best stuff, reiterated mm-hmm. by things like the Tim Cook comments. So they're going to lean into it and make this model. That part makes perfect sense. The description of the phone is what's slightly odd, because like, they're not going to use titanium. They're going to use aluminium. They're going to make it thinner, but the screen's not going to be the biggest size they offer. Like, what's that going to do to the camera quality? Like, if you're going to make it thinner, you're going to have a really big notch, a really big camera bump to keep the same cameras. You're going to make slightly worse cameras like they do with the iPad. It's all a bit unclear and up in the air, but at least it's different, because, I mean, the lineup this fall is going to look the same, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
They're not changing anything. They're adding a capture button, and that's about it.
Bigger screens, slightly bigger screens.
Slightly bigger screens, yeah, slightly bigger screens. I'm kind of down. I'm down with it, but it's definitely wonky. Like, this is one of those rumors. Like, you know, so many times Apple sticks to like a schedule and like the same thing the next year happens, and like you can kind of predict it that way. This is left field enough that no one could really predict this until the information and Jeff Pugh kind of reported on it.
And I'm all for like a rethought design language for the iPhone again, because we've been mostly the same since the iPhone 12. And this new iPad Pro is kind of like a flex that Apple can still design super cool hardware, even though the iPhone hasn't changed too much since the iPhone 12. Like next year, if this iPhone 17 Ultra gets the iPad Pro treatment, super thin, just a super cool device, I'm all for that. Like, flex your design muscles, counteract the narrative that Apple design isn't as good nowadays. Like, show us what you can do.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
All right, I think that does it for this week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, where you can leave a rating and a review. Get an ad-free version of the show with bonus content at 9to5mac.com/join for $5 a month or $50 a year. Send us feedback, happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can find me on Threads, Twitter, Mastodon, at Chance H. Miller. And Mayo, what about you?
At BZA Mayo.
All right, thanks, Mayo.